This is Offstage and On the Air, performance number 367. I am Lisa Sheps. I am joined by my co-host extraordinaire, Miss Nicole Shiro, who is also our engineer for the day, operating the controls. You are listening to us on KOOP Hornsby Austin 91.7 FM, streaming live at koop.org. Remember, folks, if it's theater, it's on Offstage and On the Air. Don't go away.
Step right up, the show's about to begin. Forget your troubles and raise your cup. Step right up, feast your eyes on the wonders of this world. Oh yeah.
Someone holds me safe.
It is Wednesday, June 29th, 2016. On the show today, we have our two very good friend companies here. Different Stages will be here with their production of John Gabriel Borkman, and later on the show, City Theater, and their show by almost known playwright William Shakespeare, Midsummer Night's Dream. And of course, we'll have lively discussions of the world of theater in Austin, New York, Chicago. I said Chicago twice, so we're going there twice. Yeah, let's bring that down before it gets too crescendo-y on us.
Not the crescendo.
You gotta watch the crescendo. Nicole Shiro, we're back for another week.
We are. We're back.
And we've switched places. You're at the controls.
I am, again.
Yes. Yay! So how do you feel? This is the first time that you're completely at the controls and I'm here with you.
I feel okay. It seemed to go pretty well.
You're going to do good. So I want to thank the swinger who was standing in for Kim Simpson in the International Folk Bazaar, playing some wacky English folky kind of crazy.
I kind of like the music they play before us. It makes me a little excited.
I liked it as well. I feel
like I go on a tour internationally.
I do. So I'm checking in with you. How are you?
I'm good.
You went to see somebody perform this weekend.
I did. Alan Cumming was so nice.
Who?
He decided he would play for my birthday.
Oh, how nice.
I know. I was like, oh, that's so kind
of you.
That's
so nice of him.
So yes, I went and saw the Alan Cumming for my birthday.
Yeah, and how do you report?
He rocks. He's Alan Cumming. Okay. He sang me some sappy songs. And actually, kind of ironically, all of us that went, even my brother, we've all been singing. He sang a Billy Joel tune.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, he has that very, very thick Scottish brogue.
He does. But less so when he sings, though, right?
Oh, no. It's there when he sings.
Okay, sorry. I didn't mean to say that.
If he's not in character in a show, I should say. It's there when he sings.
Okay.
So we've all been singing Billy Joe. We will all go down together.
that sounds a little Russian to me.
It was at times. But it's just hilarious that we can't all stop singing that. I'm like, I have a whole new Billy Joel, like, in my head.
I was in Tegucigalpa, Honduras, and I listened to a singer named Paloma, and she sang, it was a Billy Joel song. I forgot what it was, but in a heavy, heavy
accent.
Spanish accent.
See, that'd be kind of cool, too.
Oh, don't go changing to try and please me.
That was phenomenal.
It. Yep, I remembered.
That is phenomenal.
So let's welcome who's here with us in the audience. We have quite a brood here, as we like to say in the business. Starting from my left, we'll see if I get it right. Jason Graft, welcome.
Hello.
Oh, I was looking right at Levi and I said Jason.
Well, he was in
Levi
that vicinity,
Gore.
Though.
Yes.
I'm Lindsay McKenna.
Hello.
And then we have Norman Blumenthal.
Hello.
We have Jan Phillips.
Good afternoon.
Catherine Schroeder.
Hello.
And the incomparable Ev Lunning, who's never been on this show before.
Good day. Nice to be here.
Good day.
Hello.
So we have much to talk about, but that first piece of music, did you recognize it at all?
I did a bit, and then I was like, wait a minute. Is it...
It's from a Disney movie.
Is it the new... speaking of Russian, what's her name?
Anastasia.
Anastasia, thank you.
You were quite right. That is Anastasia that has a Broadway opening. They have a house somewhere.
Yeah, the little girl playing Anastasia looks really cute.
Yeah.
And I have to say, I was like, well, they definitely made the costumes look like the animated movie.
I've never seen it. I know. Anyway, the principal roles are played by Christy Altomare. I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly, who was in Mamma Mia, and Derek Kalena. And also has John Bolton and Caroline O'Connor. Caroline O'Connor.
Oh, she must have some Kerrygold butter.
She must have some of that butter.
She's a Kerrygold butter.
Anyway, it is going to open in April at the Broadhurst Theater.
Oh, that's where I saw One Hugh Jackman. I love that place.
Oh, Hugh. Okay, we got Hugh in here. We got Alan in here.
We didn't say J.J. Watt. Not there yet, you go. It's all done.
We got it. Anyway, so Anastasia.
There we go. Summed it up.
I find that there's lots of little things. I want to talk about Ham for Ham. How much do we like Ham for Ham?
We love the Ham for Ham.
Does everybody know what Ham for Ham is? Anybody not? No. We have some. So Ham for Ham is from Hamilton, of course. But it was all the people that were waiting outside that were in line waiting. And Lin-Manuel Miranda comes out with people from the show, and they entertain the people out in the
hammock
with a
for the hams
with one of the what are these things called?
Microphone?
Not a microphone. It's megaphone. Thank you. Thank you. The sound is awful.
I wish the radio listeners could have seen the charade you were doing.
Yeah, you know what? When you get to be my age, things like this happen. I just forget words. Anyway, they come out with a megaphone. It's really the sound, but it's really good. But I sort of I love the tradition that it started, and I'm hoping that other shows. And I guess it would have to be hit shows because you need lines standing out there. But I hope they pick up the mantle. I think Wicked could do it. Lion King could do it.
I bet you they could.
Yeah. All right. Okay.
Well, you want me to call them and
thanks
get
for listening
them on
to the
it?
Show. All right. Well, you know, I try.
Gosh. So there's Lisa. That is so cool. Wouldn't that be awesome?
Thank you.
Oh my God! Imagine if the Lion King did it.
That's
Whoa!
What I All right.
Was
stop.
That better?
Yeah. So there was a headline of a review for a show that just caught my eye, and it's filled with scatological humor, and it's called Here I Sit, Broken Hearted.
Story of our lives.
Does everybody know that rhyme?
Yeah.
Okay, so here I sit, all broken hearted, tried to do something, but only did something else. Scatological. Anyway, there's a really terrible show at the Samuel Beckett Theater that's all based on that. It's scatological humor. It's got four men in it that sit in stalls, and it's based on the graffiti in men's rooms, basically.
Okay, this is hilarious.
Yeah. But there is a one woman shows up in this show at one time for a very short time. When she walks in, realizes she's in the wrong bathroom and leaves. And the very end of the review says, she's a welcome lifeline of reason in a sea of immaturity. But one reason why I want to talk about this is, I circled four words on this one.
Oh, okay. Who wrote this? Was it Isherwood or
no,
Brantley?
No, it was none of the normal. It was Andy Webster.
Andy Webster wants to get up there with Isherwood.
So rather than what I normally do is I make fun of critics that seem to that you need to have a dictionary. They use words that they don't typically need to use, so that I have to look them up, or other people have to look them up. So I read the sentence in context and let people guess what it is. But I'm not going to do that this time because there's four of them. I'm just going to rapid fire go to them and see if you know what they mean. And I'm going to tell you what they mean if you don't.
Okay.
Okay. So we're going to start with verisimilitude.
As if it's true.
Very good. Appearance of truth. Good. So one for F. Ribald. But everybody should know this, but I didn't. Ribald.
Bawdy and funny.
Vulgar. Good. Okay. So far the right side of the room is winning.
They're just quicker.
Hangdog.
Oh, I like that.
Yeah. Hangdog. Anybody?
Guilty.
Yeah. Y'all are good. Shamefaced. Y'all are much fun.
Sad.
And sad. Shamefaced is what it says. Oh God, I was doing so good on the pronunciations, but here we'll figure this out right now.
Fusillade.
Fusillade.
That's like a barrage.
Yeah. A what?
A barrage.
Discharge of a fire.
Rifle fire.
Yep.
Actually.
Yeah. Very good.
Y'all
are
very,
to shoot.
Y'all are very good. So okay. Yeah. So that was clearly I'm not as smart as others. So Shovel Along is closing in July once Audra McDonald leaves.
I know.
It's bringing up a slew of criticism and other things about the decision to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And I just sort of want to talk about it and see what other people felt. A lot of people are saying, so it's the reason why they're closing is for financial reasons. Audra's leaving, and she's the big draw. But it also has
Savion's going
Savion
into
Glover.
It.
Glover. It's got Billy Porter,
Brian Stokes Mitchell.
It's got a lot of star
the whole
power.
Cast, yeah.
And it tells a story that's rather important about the theater people of color.
Correct.
That we don't get to see. And so I guess a lot of people are saying that the producers should, you know, not worry about the money and let it stay open, et cetera, et cetera. But what do y'all think?
I was shocked by it because, I mean, I know Savion worked on the piece, but he hasn't been in it. He's just going into it.
Right.
So you would have thought that, I don't know. I kind of as
doesn't have the star power. I mean, none of those people, they all have a lot of star power, but they're not Audra McDonald.
Well, I would feel insulted as a cast member.
They've kept Chicago alive forever and ever.
True.
Bringing in a whole bunch of, surely they could find someone of equal power who may have never been on Broadway.
Yeah.
Who could do it, who I would think, you know, might pull an audience, a different audience.
She set the bar high, though, at 7 months pregnant, tapping and singing and kicking her leg behind her head.
Yeah.
On top of already being Audra McDonald.
I don't disagree, but how would you feel if you were Rhiannon Giddens, who was set to replace her in July?
Not really good.
No, poor thing. She says she said her heart is broken completely and utterly now to pick up the pieces. But can you imagine? I mean, that was all set up because she's been set to stop at this point for quite a while for maternity leave. And so
I think it's a bummer.
It's a bummer.
It's a total bummer. It's a total bummer for so many different reasons. And boo,
I wish I was rich.
Producers. I want to be a producer.
like a big time Broadway star. Okay.
Yeah, that's a kind of a bummer.
Yep.
Yeah,
all right. Well, that's.
We agree.
I think we should just close this show down
we
right now.
We just agreed today.
We did agree. We agree.
And that is random.
It. But this is the sad part of commercial theater
because
it is
know.
By its very nature commercial. They are already losing money even with Audra right now. And
which is so sad, man. The tapping in that show is bananas.
It's bananas.
Bananas awesome.
You say bananas, I say bananas. The Jimmys were last week.
Yes, those crazy little Jimmys with those teens.
Is everybody familiar with the Jimmys? What about Gatsmata?
The Jimmys?
In the microphone.
Is the Jimmys a band? Who are they?
No.
Okay. Well, they are, but like that's not the Jimmys.
Who, so,
no,
are you
but
familiar
I like
with the Greater
Jimmys.
Austin High School Musical Theater Awards? No, God, you guys should. So,
the Jimmys is the national version that the Greater High School Austin Musical Awards are based on.
There are musical theater awards all through the country, and if you qualify, and we haven't yet, Austin hasn't yet, you can be part of this competition where they go to New York, they perform at the Minskoff, they were talked to and given advice from Lord Andrew Lloyd Webber, amongst others. They had a professional choreographer, a professional publicist talking about how they should. It's interesting. The publicist, there's a slideshow, and you can get it at offstageonair.com when we post the show notes.
It's kind of interesting with the publicist. I found that whole part interesting. Yeah. As a publicist, I was like, that's kind of
giving them advice about what to say and what not to say, and specifically, you know, be careful about
social
Facebook.
Media, because that's so such a different ballgame in this day and age.
Yep. So the winners, I don't remember who the winners was, and I but anyway, there were some winners and there were some losers. But
but the Broadway community is a big, big part of it, and all the different shows from producers to crew to cast to creatives, and these kids get to be mentored and all work together and perform in numbers together and rehearse for a solid week. There was a PBS documentary.
There
was
a documentary
2 years
about
ago?
4 years ago.
Was it that? God, was
and
it
I
that
believe it
ago?
Was the second Jimmy's. And the Jimmy's is named for Jimmy Niederlander. And it was this documentary. And if you can see it on the YouTubes or the
PBS may have it on PBS, there. I don't know.
Watch it because it's really, really great. And I believe it was just the second year of its existence. It's really not been around all that long.
But
it's amazing. If you can imagine you're a high school kid from Des Moines, Iowa, and you are performing on the Minskoff Theater stage.
You just see all these bright-eyed, bushy-tailed teens just sitting there eager to take everything in. It's kind of an exciting energy when you are watching. You're like, whoa.
It's really, really, really amazing.
I agree.
We are agreed.
My goodness, what's going on?
Something's wrong.
What is even more amazing was the phenomenal amount of talent in that show, yes. which was just jaw-dropping because you looked at them and they went, what age are you? You could go out right now, get a union contract, and be on Broadway tomorrow.
Well, yeah. Indeed, that's what's happened to many of the winners. So it culminates. There's a lot of different categories, but the ultimate category is best female lead and best male lead. And as in the Jimmys, they do the similar thing here in Austin where all the leads stand up on stage together. They do a medley of their show
that they performed at their school
up on the stage. And they all work together to do the medley, which is just heart-wrenching, good heart-wrenching. And then they all stand on stage when the winner is red, and it's amazing how, you know, we all watch the Oscars and the Tonys, and when they show the split screen of all the winners, and you're always looking at the face of the people that aren't, and they very carefully smile and clap, but these kids genuinely just encircle the winner and love, and there's so much love, it's amazing.
Yeah, and they've only known each other for like a week.
I'm getting beklempt here right now.
It's pretty amazing.
Well, but also, as we all know, when you're in a rehearsal situation, and they're basically 24/7 together for that week.
Yes,
they're making some pretty strong bonds very quickly.
Yes.
Yep. Okay.
Lifetime.
That's four times we agree.
I know.
There was another review that opened at the Harold Clurman Theater on Theater Row called what's it called? The Healing, which looked very interesting.
Oh, wait, who's in this?
Probably nobody you know because you might. I know Mary Teresa Archibald, Shannon DeVito, David Harrell, John McGinty.
John McGinty, that was it. I believe
all these people are disabled, differently abled people. Mm-hmm. So it's a story of friends gathering to mourn a woman who took her own life. The cast is mostly differently abled, not completely. But it just sounds like just a wonderful and moving piece. And Charles Isherwood writes in the middle of it, he said, he's talking about this one place. They all went to camp together at a Christian Science camp. And one of them asked another of them to pray with them. And they said, I'm not going to pray. And they said, well, you healed me before in camp. And she said, no, I didn't heal you before. Well, I'll read it to you. I didn't heal you when we were kids, and I can't heal you now, she snaps. And we hear parenthetically, but she did, we learned, by secretly slipping antibiotics into Zoe's food while she was visiting. So I just thought that was an interesting thing. But again, all the characters with the disabilities are drawn with layered naturalness, Charles Isherwood says, and you quickly forget that they all face challenges that most of us don't.
That's awesome.
It's pretty cool.
Yeah.
And that's playing I think through July...
That looks like a production
16th.
The Tilt could do.
It does. I thought exactly of Tilt. Tilt Performance Group, as everybody on this program knows, is a group that works with differently abled actors here in town. Have you seen the thing about the a cappella musical in transit that's coming to Broadway?
I saw a headline and a few things, but I didn't click and open any of it.
Well, it's not huge, but Kathleen Marshall is directing it and mm-hmm. choreographing. The vocal arrangements are by Deke Sharon, who did my Pitch Perfect movies.
I was like, your Pitch Perfect?
Bet you guys didn't know I owned those Pitch Perfect movies. And he also did that. There's a reality TV show called Something that had a cappella.
Oh, yeah. There was three or four a cappella reality shows, so I wouldn't know which one.
Never last.
No.
It's too bad because I'm a fan. Are people fans of a cappella? Some people think about a cappella as they do about mime. Just going. I like it.
I love mime. Stop that.
I'm stuck in a box. That's my mime for the radio.
Don't make fun of my mime.
I love mime. A mime is a terrible thing to waste.
So ladies and gentlemen, she's
you actually
here.
Sent me a link, but I'd already printed out the thing about the Kardashians.
Oh my gosh, I just was laughing so hard and really Andrew Lloyd Webber.
I did not see the link. Did they have a video or something?
Oh, well, no. Him trying to, he's trying to sue them and get them to cease and desist.
So Kardashians is a, it's Kardashians Break the Musical.
Kardashians.
And it's a Kardashian family mixes with cats. Basically.
Did you see the images of the costumes and the women and everything?
I
was dying.
The review says it's all pretty stupid, but not without artfulness.
Right. It's the same people that did the Full House musical.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So it's the spoofy kind of, yeah. I don't know why Andrew Lloyd Webber is taking any of this seriously. But
well, you know, he's all full of himself.
He sent him a cease and desist.
You know what? That can be a good thing for a company. You take companies like the Institution Theater got a cease and desist from NPR for This American Life, and they display it proudly.
Right. I'm just laughing at, though, it's not all the Cats music. It's the Kardashians as cats, he's suing them as a cease and desist. I'm like, really, dude?
And so, of course, they have all the Kardashians, but they even have the Bruce Jenner character who, I don't know what he's called. But by the end, he's Catelyn.
Catelyn.
And it says, Catelyn steals everyone else's thunder, and Peter Smith, a transgender performer who plays both incarnations, ultimately steals the show, even finding an empowerment message and all that lunacy, which I think is sort of cool.
Yeah.
Yep.
I would totally go. I was laughing so hard. I was like, that just seems like check your brain at the door and laugh. Yeah.
It's at the Electra Theater in Midtown.
Oh, that's my name when I don't want to tell people my name when I go out. And they want to introduce me. I'm like, okay. I'm Electra.
Electra Shiro.
No, I don't even give him Shiro. It's just Electra.
I'm Dr. Pepper. okay. Let's see what we are. I'm not really even following the script. We're going to hold off on that. That's going to be the last thing we're going to talk about. I just want to remind everybody that She Loves Me streaming.
Live stream tomorrow.
Tomorrow night at 7 p.m. on BroadwayHD.com. Mm-hmm. Feel free to come over to my house and watch it. I watched it. It is, you do have to purchase tickets for it, which I did. So, okay, that's that. So we're going to get right to the quiz, shall we?
Dun, dun, dun. How did you do on it today?
I didn't do well.
Oh.
And y'all are going to laugh at me because I think y'all are going to do very, very well. So this is a quiz I take. The New York Theater Guide does a quiz. It just picks up five random questions, multiple choice, and I do it. And then I quiz everybody else, see if you're smarter than me. And you'll be surprised to know that most people are smarter than me. Okay, so ready?
Yep. Okay. Ready.
Yeah, this is radio, so we use
ready.
Verbal.
Ready.
Okay. Which Broadway theater is the oldest continually operating legitimate theater in New York? Is it the Lyceum, the Booth, or the Belasco?
It's the Booth or the Belasco.
I would say the Belasco.
Yeah, I might go with the Belasco. Yeah.
Anybody else? Okay, I had the same thing. Booth or Belasco, and I wanted to say Booth, but I was thinking, you know, it's Belasco, but it's not. It's the Lyceum.
It's the Lyceum. Yeah. Wow.
Yep, so good. I don't feel as stupid right now. This one we did a few days ago, so I'll just give it to you again. Whose only line in his first play was, "Tennis, anyone?"
Oh, and I knew this one, so I can't.
James Cagney, John Wayne, or Humphrey Bogart?
Bogart.
Yeah, Bogart. Yeah, whatever. Okay, this is an easy one, and I don't think Norman should be able to answer it, or Ev. I don't know. Anyway, I'm not going to give you choices. Who wrote Blythe Spirit?
Noel Coward.
I told you guys couldn't answer.
But they did it in unison without looking at each other.
Who's done Blythe Spirit? Only me? Wow. Okay. I wasn't in it. I was props person.
Back you still
in the
worked
day.
On
in
it?
In the 70s. Yeah. I loved it. It's a wonderful show.
So did you
I
say,
love me some
if
Noel
you worked
Coward,
on it
though.
In the 70s, did you say, I work on Blythe Spirit? Waka, 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 waka.
Yes. Is that 70s...
sound.
Okay.
You don't remember all that in the 70s? I do.
Eugene O'Neill. No, I was not alive in the 70s. Eugene O'Neill won his second Pulitzer for which play? Long Day's Journey, Anna Christie, or Beyond the Horizon?
Beyond the Horizon.
Yeah, you shouldn't have been able to answer that one either.
But I produced Beyond the Horizon.
You're
that's
wrong,
why
though. It's really? Anna Christie.
It's Anna Christie?
Yeah.
Because okay. Beyond the Horizon was the first one, right?
Probably. It doesn't
yes,
say.
Yeah.
Did he not win a Pulitzer for Long Day's Journey?
He won for Long Day's Journey 9. That was he won.
No, I don't think
he won a long.
Okay, we're going to do some research.
All right, I'm going to.
We're going to do some research.
Because that was produced after he was dead because
that's true.
He didn't want it produced. I mean, it was only because, what is it, Jose Quintero went to, what was his, yes, Carlotta Monterey O'Neill, mm-hmm. who was probably Dragon Woman, who and got her to convince him they could produce it.
Thank God that happened, though,
yeah,
too,
because
right?
O'Neill said not for 25 years until after he died.
Right. Okay. We're going to...
I'm looking
this is
up.
The kind of hard-hitting
it's
journalism we have here on this show. Okay.
Still won the Pulitzer.
Last question. The Broadway premiere of the much-revived musical Guys and Dolls was in which year? 1950, 55, or 65?
1950.
50.
You're saying 50? Anybody else?
55.
55. That's what I said, but I was wrong. You might be right, though. 65. No, it was 50.
It was 50?
I didn't realize it was that old.
I love it.
Okay, so that's it for the quiz. Do you have a trivia question for us today?
I do.
Okay, so here's the trivia question. And while she's looking it up in the big book of trivia, just realize that we this is something that we do now. We answer at Backstage at Offstage, which is part of our podcast. So if you're not listening to us on the podcast, my question is why? Why not? Go to offstageonair.com, sign up, we'll send it to you, or you can get it on iTunes or Stitcher. There's lots of different ways. You could even tell Alexa on Echo to just play Offstage and On the Air, and she will. Oh. Actually, she won't. I've tried.
Oh, she won't?
No, I'm gonna get it. We're gonna get on TuneIn, and then she will.
Oh, all right.
Okay, what's the question?
Okay, well, I took one in the world of Cole Porter. So Cole Porter and Fields did The New Yorkers in 1930. It had a short run, but gave the public Love for Sale, a song frequently censored for its subject matter. The gay divorce in 1932 with book by Dwight Taylor did far better at 248 performances. The show starred Fred Astaire, Claire Lucci, and Luella Geer. Astaire would later star in the movie version, The Gay Divorcee, which cut nearly all of Porter's great score. Porter often accommodated singers tailoring songs to fit their needs, but when Astaire wanted one song from The Gay Divorce cut because he found it difficult to sing, Porter flatly refused. What was the song? Hint.
Don't say it out loud, guys.
It was one of the few that made it into the movie score. A. After You Who. B. I've Got You on My Mind. C. Night and Day. D. You're in Love. Or E. The Physician.
Okay, so it's which of those songs was cut from the show but put into the movie? And it is The Gay Divorcee, I believe, not The Gay Divorce, correct?
This was from The Gay Divorce. There's The Gay Divorcee and The Gay Divorce. That's why I said
shows
both.
Shows my ignorance. Okay. Well, great. So we'll get the answer to that at Offstage, Backstage at Offstage. And the last thing we're going to go out, we're going to talk about James Earl Jones, who joined the cast of God Bless You, Mr. Rosewater.
I love him.
Which is going to be done at the Off-Center Encores, Offstage, Off-Center Encores. The smaller encores.
The mini version.
Kate Weatherhead's in it. Fantino Santana. Lots of people are in it. So we're going to play a little piece of music from this God Bless You, Mr. Rosewater. Forgive the audio. There's no recording of it. This took from a live performance from the anniversary of the death of the composer. Somebody help me if I don't have it myself. At Howard Ashman. So this is a Howard Ashman and Alan Menken show.
30 miles from the banks of the Ohio, I am standing on a...
We are back. You're listening to Offstage and On the Air with Lisa Sheps and Nicole Shiro. We've been talking to lots of people, but we're now going to switch gears and talk to just a few people. And those are our good friends and guests from different stages. So I'd like to re-welcome Norman Blumensaat.
Hello.
Jan Phillips.
Hi.
Catherine Schroeder.
Hello.
And Ev Loving. Loving. I keep wanting to put a V in your last name, Ev. Loving. I want to say Loving because you're a loving man.
But say Loving, that's not a bad thing.
Well, thank you very much. But it's actually the name of a place in Norway. So.
Well, I know. I used to vacation there.
Did you really?
No. Lønning.
Oh. In Lønning. Lønning. I'd eat knoodle in Lønning. So, Norman, tell us about this show, John Gabriel Borkman, written by Henry Gibson.
So it's Ibsen's next to last play, his penultimate play. It's a play about a banker who embezzled money, and he was in love with one twin, but married the other twin because the woman he was really in love with, the man who knew that he had embezzled, wanted this woman. Uh-huh. So he sort of like gave her up to him without ever telling the woman. What proceeded to happen was he got the woman refused to deal with this guy, and he ended up going to prison for 5 years. And when he gets out of prison, he lives downstairs. He lives upstairs. The wife lives downstairs, and for 8 years they do not speak to each other.
Oh my!
So it's a play about very cold Scandinavian people.
Cold Scandinavian people. Yeah. But it's done with bitter, dark humor, as Ibsen does, correct?
Oh, yes. Very dark humor, yes.
Well, great. We're going to get more into the nuts and bolts, but we have to take a quick little detour here. And, Ev, I'm going to ask you to choose a number between 12 and 30.
I'm going to choose 21.
21. Okay, we'll see who you chose. Stand by. We're going to get there in 2 seconds. Here we go. We're going to get there, I promise.
Howdy, y'all. This is Dale Watson.
I gotta go!
I'm in the bathroom. Somebody needs to use it. Howdy, y'all. This is Dale Watson, singer, songwriter, and thespian. And you're listening to Offstage and On the Air on KOOP Hornsby, Austin 91.7 FM.
That's great. And Norman, I have to tell you, you have showed up here so often lately in our Choose the Number thing. And we love Norman.
Yeah, we do. And it was, I thought for sure, I'm like, I bet you it'll be Norman. And
I would have just played Norman's, but we play you so often. I just thought
a few different versions. Yeah. So
was this the one where I stumbled over the words?
You
that
did.
That one's been played.
And then, of course, I had to play with it audio-wise. So, Ev Lennon, you play the title
John
character.
John Gabriel Borkman.
Okay. And who does everybody else play? Catherine, who do you play?
I'm Ella, the abandoned one.
The abandoned one.
I'm Gunhild, the wife.
Who lives upstairs? Who lives downstairs?
I live downstairs.
Okay.
And I live upstairs.
Do y'all like pound on the floor and the ceiling?
No, I walk up and down and annoy
me. Tell us about this. How is that handled scenically?
How is it handled? We've done a completely non-realistic production.
Oh, good. Okay, we love that.
Yeah. We have like blue walls and period furniture and costumes. And other than that, it's non-realistic. And to suggest because the play ends up in the snow, to suggest the snow, the play starts with every piece of furniture draped with white fabric.
Uh-huh.
And at the end of the show, we go back to all the white drapings when they end up in the snow.
Good. I love it when we use... what's the word I'm trying to come up with? Just representative things that's great. I love the non-realistic part
cast
of things.
Verisimilitude as Hyde, in other words.
Exactly.
Indubitably, sir. Exactly. Now, y'all are prepared to do a little scene, aren't you?
Well, if we can do two brief scenes, but we'll
okay.
see.
Okay, do so, two brief scenes. Set so them up for us.
We're going to do a scene first that from the starts of the play with the twins, Ella and Gunhild.
Okay, so so roll with it. This is the twins, Ella and Grunhild, and we're doing a scene from Different Stages production of John Gabriel Borkman.
How has he taken it?
Him? I haven't Earhart?
No, the other.
Him. I haven't asked.
Asked? You surely don't need to ask.
You cannot suppose that we communicate, or that we talk, or that I see him.
Not even see him?
See a man who spent 5 years of his life locked up in prison. The shame of it. When one thinks what the name John Gabriel Borkman used to stand for. No, I have cut him out of my life forever.
You are hard, Gunhild.
I am to him.
He is your husband.
Do you remember him telling the court that I had squandered his fortune? That I had driven him to the brink of ruin?
Was there no truth in that?
That's how he wanted it. Everything had to be done in style, however extravagant, however reckless.
If you knew it was reckless, you should have held back.
How could I know whose money I was spending? Never mind what he was spending. He was 10 times worse than I ever was.
He had his position to keep up. That would account for most of it, I imagine.
Oh, yes. We had to entertain. It was expected of us. He was always very clear about that. And entertain he did. Drove in a coach and four, like royalty. People took off their hats and bowed. They thought of him as a king, you see. They didn't use his surname all over the country, wherever he went. John Gabriel this, John Gabriel that. Everyone knew what a great man John Gabriel was.
He was a great man in those days, Gunhild.
Oh, if appearances were all. But never once, not for an instant, not by a look or a hint or a gesture, did he ever tell me how he was paying for it. I knew nothing.
Nobody did.
Well, the nobodies don't concern me. If anybody deserved the truth, it was I, his wife. I had a right to it. And he lied to me. He lied and he lied. He lied without stopping.
I don't believe it. He may not have spelled it out, but he wouldn't have lied.
Well, call it what you please. The result was the same. We crashed. It crashed. The whole magnificent folly crashed to the ground.
For him and others, too.
But mark this, Ella. I've not given up. I'll be repaid, believe me.
What do you mean?
I'll get it all back. My name, my honor, my fortune. I'll have payment in full for the ruin of my life. I'm not alone. There's someone who will wash away the filth I'm covered in.
Gunhild, Gunhild.
An avenger lives, and all the evil which his father did to me, he will turn to good.
Excellent. Yikes.
Bum, 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 bum.
You are mean. You remind me of Margaret Hamilton in The Wizard of Oz.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
My pretty.
That was a great scene.
Yeah.
I like how you pronounce that name again.
Gunhild.
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 Do me a favor. When you talk, please put the microphones very close to you. We had to boost the volume on you guys.
Okay.
That was a great scene. What's the next scene we're going to hear?
Well, this is... this is the
and the, there's I'm one sorry, right there.
This is the first meeting between Borkman and Ella, and Ella was the woman who he really loved, who he gave tried to give up to the other to Mr. Hinkle.
Okay.
Now she suddenly reappeared in his life.
Yes.
Ooh. Okay. And are y'all upstairs or downstairs?
Upstairs.
I love that you asked that, Lisa.
Okay. And here is the second scene from different stages. John Gabriel Borkman.
It is I, Borkman.
Is it Ella? Is it Ella Rentheim?
Yes, my Ella, as you used to call me once, all those long, long years ago.
It is you, Ella.
Do you recognize me now?
Yes, I'm beginning to.
Time has not treated me kindly, Borkman, I'm sure you've noticed.
You've changed. When I saw you a moment ago,
I've lost those dark curls around my neck, the ones you love to twist around your fingers.
Ah, that accounts for it. Yes, I see. You wear it up at the back now.
That's very observant of you. Yes, I've changed my hairstyle.
I'd no idea you were in this part of the country.
I've just arrived.
Why did you travel in winter?
We'll come to that.
Is there something you want me to do for you?
You and others as well, but we must travel a long way back before we talk about that.
You must be tired.
I am.
Won't you sit down?
Thank you, I shall. I must rest for a moment. I can hardly believe how long it's been.
It is an age. And between that time and this, such horrors.
A lifetime has passed, all wasted.
Wasted?
Yes, two lifetimes, yours and mine.
I don't consider that my life's been wasted, not yet.
And mine?
That's your responsibility, Ella.
How can you say that?
You could have found happiness without me.
Could I?
You could have, if you had wanted.
Yes, I knew very well that there was someone waiting to console me.
And you refused.
I did.
Time after time. Year after year.
Year after year, I threw my happiness away. Is that the point you're making?
You and he had every chance of a successful marriage, and that would have saved me.
You?
Yes, you could have saved me, Ella.
What are you talking about?
Each time you rejected him, he assumed I was to blame, so he took his revenge the cruelest way he knew. He had some confidential papers, which I'd given him for safekeeping, and he exposed them. And that was it. I was destroyed. And it was your fault, Ella. Your fault entirely.
Well, Borkman, it seems I've much to make up to you for.
One could argue that. I know, of course, how much I am in your debt. You bought the estate when it was auctioned. You put the house at my disposal, and that of your sister.
That of your sister. Dun, dun, dun. What a wonderful... It sounds wonderful. I want to go see it.
You should.
Come on down.
I will make every attempt. So, y'all are... Where are you playing, speaking of that?
The Vortex.
The Vortex. Lovely theater. And when do you... You're playing now. You opened last weekend.
Yes.
How'd it go?
It went well. It went very well.
Good. Our audience is loving it.
Yes.
Of course. Of course. They are. Actually, I have no doubt. I've always enjoyed my different stages shows. You do some really good work. We were talking about Pygmalion before we went on the air and how lovely that was.
That comes up a lot.
Pygmalion?
Yeah,
there you go.
Your production of Pygmalion.
Oh, it does?
Yes, right. It does. Okay. In good references, yeah.
Oh, well, good.
But it
GRs,
does.
We call them. Good references. Well, great. So where can folks go to get more information about the show?
You can either go to the Different Stages website, which will be direct you to the Vortex website. Right. So whichever place.
Wonderful. Well, thank you guys for being on the show. I hope y'all can stick around and join us backstage. Okay, I'm going to take that as a yes.
I was like, was...
That was different. That was Norman Blumenthal, Catherine Schroeder, Jan Phillips, and Ev Lunning with Different Stages production of John Gabriel Borkman at the Vortex Theater now through July 16th. For more information, you may visit maine.org/diffstages, or you can just Google Different Stages, or as a third choice, you can go to vortexrep.org.
And I've purged my soul and my heart too, so climb up the mountain I've asked not to blow.
I love that song. I love that musical, though.
There was actually, I almost played the version from De Lovely, the movie De Lovely.
Uh-huh.
That's all. That's the end of that story.
It's a great movie.
It is a great movie. I love it.
I love that Kevin
Kline. So, you know, who doesn't? So, in local news, the main thing that I want to talk about is the sad news that Sunday night, the Salvage Vanguard Theater had their closing event at the theater. Did anybody go?
Yes. No, I had strike. Yeah, I was supposed
to
go.
Patty Neftivin from Ground Floor Theater went to replace me. I wasn't there. Not to replace me. We were both going to go, but I couldn't go. But it's a very sad day. So they stripped down the theater. I passed it on my way here today, and it is empty. So
I'm making a sad face on radio.
Yeah, so there is one venue gone. Hopefully not permanently, but it's certainly not going to be replaced with a venue in the very, very near future. That's for sure. Because talking to Jenny Larson over there, they're still in search of a new place. So our hearts go out to the whole community around that. It sucks.
I know. I have a Pulitzer Prize.
Oh, okay.
Answer.
All right. Okay, so that's it for just the thing about Salvage Vanguard, SVT, but they're still out there. They're still going to be producing. They have a season.
I was like,
I've
got a newsletter still, and yeah. I mean, they're not so gone.
They opened the venue 10 years ago, and
I can't believe it's been that long.
Before the Jason Newlander started Salvage Vanguard, what, 20 years ago, I guess?
Yeah, I think. Yep. At least.
Yep. So what's the Pulitzer deal with Eugene O'Neill?
So the Pulitzer deal, the very first Pulitzer was 1918, Beyond the Horizon. Two was Anna Christie in 1922. Third was Strange Interlude in 1928. And Long Day's Journey Into the Night was in 57. It was after he passed.
Four Pulitzers.
Four.
That's crazy. He's like, he's inching up to my level. He's like... If he was,
he's almost know, not quite. He's like that little engine that could.
Oh my gosh, four Pulitzers! Can you imagine?
Yeah,
yeah,
not bad.
Not bad at all.
Not bad.
So, what do you have anything locally you want to talk about? I didn't really look
Salvage
up.
Salvage was kind of my
yeah. Well, it's our big local story. And, you know, as an update for those who are listening to this, Ground Floor Theater is still closed, but we hope to open at the very latest. We hope to open in January of 2017. And then, of course, there's...
I'm giving you jazz hands!
There's ideas of other venues that are possibly closing down in the near future as well. So we're all crossing our fingers that maybe some other people will open some new places.
We shall come together.
It's not easy to do, I can tell you from personal history.
No.
So today in theater history, y'all ready?
I'm ready.
Okay.
Is it good?
I think it is, actually.
Oh, okay.
This one I loved. In 1954, A Star is Born.
I was.
Were you born in 1954?
I love it.
Okay, well, you were born. So... In your birth year, Carol Haney's understudy went on in the Pajama Game.
Oh.
Can you guess who that person
Shirley
was?
MacLaine.
Shirley mm-hmm. MacLaine went on the Pajama Game tonight in 1954. Isn't that amazing?
I can't believe it's that long ago.
That's amazing. So George Friedley was the critic at the time. He wrote in his review.
Bananas! Is that what he wrote?
Yeah, it says it right there. Bananas. He said, the night I saw the show, Miss Haney was sick and her understudy, Shirley MacLaine, took over. It was one of the most accomplished and completely professional performances I've had the pleasure of enjoying.
Wow. What a great, first response. Yeah.
Oh, that would happen if I took over.
A little well received.
Yeah. So the Alvin Theater, which was the original home of Annie, in 1983 was renamed to the Neil Simon Theater.
Hmm.
Zing. Okay.
Zing.
2003, it's the death, the anniversary of the death of Katharine Hepburn. I don't think she needs to, we don't need to say who she was. I didn't realize she was in West Side Story on Broadway.
I did know that.
I did not.
I'm fascinated by her.
She was also in Coco, but we knew that. We've played Coco.
Yes.
Sounds just very scary.
Yes. but in a good way.
Also, African-American director Lloyd Richards passed away in 2006. He was the artistic director of the Yale Rep throughout the 80s, amongst other things.
I can't believe people have been gone that long.
And directed the first production of Raisin in the Sun.
Yes. Pretty amazing.
Yeah.
And so is Coco as scary as Lauren Bacall in Applause with her three notes?
I think maybe scarier.
No, it might be scarier in Woman.
Yeah, scarier. Okay.
Yeah.
Birthdays, Frank Lesser in 1910, Ralph Burns in 1922, James Patterson, Brian Darcy James, 1968, youngster, and Emily Skinner, who I had the pleasure of seeing in Fun Home just a couple of weeks ago. She rocked the party. I have to tell you.
That's where Dale Watson got his equity card in his show with Emily Skinner. And Martin Burke's about to star in The Drowsy Chaperone with her in Oklahoma.
Oh, lovely. Mm-hmm. In the state of Oklahoma?
In the state of Oklahoma.
Are they doing a play within a play?
Oh, my God. Could you imagine Oklahoma meets The Drowsy Chaperone? We'd be there forever.
Locally, birthdays, Samantha Bagden.
Oh!
Tomorrow is Ryan Crowder's birthday of Penfold Theater. And I always mispronounce his name, so I'm sure people can help me. I Content Love Knowles. I would say Content. It's Content Love Knowles. Her, her birthday is on Friday.
She was just on recently, too. Not too long ago, wasn't she?
I think
you know
was.
What? My time span has been long. I think it was like a month
ago. So we're going to go away. This is from a show called Valmeth, and I'm doing this in honor of Salvage Vanguard.
Okay.
I won't miss these skies of gray. That's
we are back. You're listening to Offstage and on the Air on KOOP, streaming live at KOOP.org. We are here. We're talking to the folks of City Theater. And we are welcoming back Levi Gore.
Hello.
Hi, Levi.
Hello.
Jason Graft.
Good afternoon.
And Lindsay McKenna.
Hello.
So y'all are doing a show that's not very well known called Midsummer Night's Dream.
Correct. Yes.
Okay. So Lindsay, you're the director.
Yes.
What's the story?
What's the scoop?
What's the scoop on this show?
This show is, as everyone knows, four intersecting plot lines between there's the marriage between the Duke of Theseus and Hippolyta happening, sort of a domestic argument between the king and the queen of the fairies.
That happens in my house every night.
Four young lovers that also have their own problems to work out. And then in our production, we have a slight twist on the Reed Mechanicals, and they are actually traveling sideshow performers that get in over their head for the Duke's wedding.
Okay. Wonderful addition. Yeah, it's really like Shakespeare's version of the summer blockbuster. He throws everything in it. Warring royals, mistaken love, mistaken
everything.
Identities, everything.
So now, what do you guys play?
I play Bottom.
I was hoping we'd have Bottom here.
Woo!
And I'm Oberon, King of the Fairies.
Okay. Wow. So then, Levi, you're in this, in the Rude Mechanicals part of it. So we're all pretty familiar with this story, and many people are very happy. And so my favorite part is the whole Rude Mechanicals section.
Yeah.
So we were just discussing that
different.
Last week.
We were discussing that last
week.
That
we loved that part of the show.
It's always a favorite part of the play. It's probably the most humorous part is that last bit, play within the play.
Mm-hmm.
Our idea is that since we're a traveling sideshow, we have a pre-show and a show within the show. As we're working up to our bits, we have a bearded lady that's a fortune teller. I'm the strong man in the group, so the mustache.
Which is why you have the mustache with the little flippy things.
Kicking mustache, may I add?
There's a name for that, isn't there?
Handlebar mustache.
Handlebar mustache. Thank you, Raleigh fingers.
I say kicking mustache.
Did you get you that? That's a sports thing. I said a sports thing.
Lisa made a sports.
He's got a pretty
reference.
Glorious unitard as well.
Yeah, I have a leopard skin leotard. Then there's a dancing. We have our snug is a bird lady, and then a tattooed man, the barker, and a magician clown type guy.
So, what period have we set this version?
This
in?
Is a sort of a 1920s approximate.
Okay, 1920s approximate.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, are we flat? Do we have flappers?
There are some flapper dresses at the very end that are gorgeous and that I've had for years and I wanted to put on stage again.
There you go. Okay.
That's phenomenal.
I look through my closet and I say, we're going to set this in the 20s.
I love it, though. That's great. It's something I would do.
So how fun is it to play Oberon? I mean, the relationship between Oberon and Titania? Yeah,
yes.
Keep
yes.
forgetting their names. Is a fun relationship and also...
With Puck and
yes, everybody.
It's amazing to have such great scene partners to work with. And Oberon is, I found him very interesting because he's not human. And also on top of that, he's a king. So all of these shackles that we put on as humans don't necessarily have to apply to Oberon. And it really allows you to open up and explore some of the more bizarre corners of one's psyche, I guess you could say.
Right.
But also you can't go too far and have it completely unrelatable to the audience as
right.
well. And really what I think the entire cast has done was follow the mandate of our fearless leader, Lindsay, which is we're going for fun. We want everyone, the including us on stage and the people in the audience, to really sit back and enjoy the performance. And that's, if you'd ask every person in the cast, I think that's what they would say, that this has been a very fun experience.
It's an enjoyable performance to watch in general. And so two questions. First of all, just the tactical question is, how many people in this cast?
Is it 19 or 20?
Well, there's, I think it's 20.
Whoa!
20.
I'm always amazed at how many people can fit on that stage.
Exactly what I was going to say, Lisa Shaw.
I didn't want to double cast anyone. We do have one small double casting because of a girl that had to drop out of the show.
You could have called me.
Next time, Lisa.
I'm just saying, I'd make a dynamite Titania. Although I think I'd be a good bottom, too.
Oh.
Don't go. Do not go there. This is a family radio show.
I wasn't going anywhere.
So how challenging is it? So someone who's never
done... You did say you wanted to play bottom.
I did. Someone who's never done the show, but I've watched it many times, you don't really think of, from a directorial standpoint, I can't speak.
I like standpoint.
It's really four different stories. That's sort of lightly woven together. How challenging was that as a director for you?
Very challenging, because the only other shows I've directed had a three to five person cast.
Oh, yeah, 19's a big difference.
Yeah, it's a big difference.
It was four. Yeah,
plus, I was pretty confident going in, and then I was like, oh, wait a minute.
So great. So I experienced something very similar to that as well. You know, I directed Parade, and it was really the first musical I directed.
Yeah.
And one of the largest casts I ever directed. I was very scared going into it. But afterwards, once it was open, I was like just so proud of myself. Did you get that same feeling as you at opening night?
Not opening night. I think all the cast was like, what's going on with Lindsay? Because I was just pacing and biting my nails and kind of curled up in a corner like, oh, is it going to go okay? Yeah. But once the weekends passed, I mean, really, like I said, my whole goal going into it was, it's a common show, we've all seen it or maybe done it, and it should be fun. Mm-hmm. So that's what I hoped was happening, and the audience seems to be having fun, and the actors seem to be having fun.
How have the audiences been so far? So you've been open just this last week,
just
right?
This last week. It's been
just
fantastic.
Like different stages. Fantastic. Yes. It's good.
And you're going, it surprises me, Lindsay, that you haven't directed a cast larger than four people, because she really has found a way from, you know, like Bottom, who's one of the biggest characters in the show, all the way down to Philistrate, who's like barely in the show, and every single person in the show has at least one moment to shine. And that's really, it's really impressive.
Mazel tov and golf claps.
Yes, yes.
Well, excellent. So I want to be mindful of time. Did y'all, I'm assuming we don't have a scene? Or
they
have
a couple of monologues. We have a monologue each.
If you care.
Let's roll. Let's do it. Who wants to go first?
Go ahead.
All right.
Okay, so do you need to set it up at all?
Yes, my wife Titania is asleep in front of me, and I am very creepily about ready to put some potions in her eyes.
You're a creep. Okay, this is Jason Grab.
Uber creep.
Doing a monologue from City Theater's production of Midsummer Night's Dream.
What thou seest when thou dost wake, do it for thy true love's take, love and anguish for his sake, be it ounce or cat or bear, pard or boar with bristled hair. In thy eye it shall appear, when thou wak'st it is thy dear. Wake, when some vile thing is near.
Yikes.
Vile I bring
thing
it.
Is near.
I bring
You're
it.
Mean. I think we need to hear from Bottom now.
We can
crazy.
Do that.
Okay, so need to set it up at all?
I mean, yeah, because nobody's heard of this before. So let's throw it out there for them. So this is the first thing that we come in. The mechanicals, we're getting to play together, so we're pulling out parts, and I want to play all of them, but I got to let them know what I can play best.
You can play Thisbe best.
I can play all of them best.
All right, this is Levi Gore doing a scene from a soliloquy, a monologue from City Theater's Midsummer Night's Dream.
That will ask some tears in the true performing of it. If I do it, let the audience look to their eyes. I will move storms. I will condole in some measure to the rest. Yet my chief humor is for a tyrant. I can play Earthlies rarely, or a part to tear a cat in to make all split. The raging rots and shivering shots shall break the locks of prison gates, and Phoebus' car shall shine from far and make and mar the foolish fates. This was lofty. Now name the rest of the players. This is Earthly's vein, a tyrant's vein. A lover is more condoling.
Excellent, excellent, excellent. So where can folks go to get more information about the show?
They can go to the City Theater website.
Okay, which is citytheateraustin.org. And when do y'all close? How long do you play?
We close the 17th of July.
Excellent. Thank you guys so much for being on the show.
Thanks for having us.
Hopefully y'all can stick around and join us backstage amongst the dumpsters.
Will do.
Okay, great. That was Levi Gore, Jason Graft, and Lindsay McKenna, all of City Theater's production of Midsummer Night's Dream at the City Theater through the 17th of July. For more information, citytheateraustin.org.
Sometimes when you dream, your dreams come true. In extraordinary ways, suddenly a day.
Okay, we've done it again. When you dream a dream.
One more time.
One more fun show.
That's funny you played that song. I was just talking about how I went to all the workshops for Little Women.
Did
the
you?
Musical.
I did. I've never seen it, but I love the music. It's so much fun.
Well, I laughed that I was going in to do it saying, like, Little Women, the musical. I know. I was in all these workshops. So I loved it.
So much
Who
fun.
Who knew?
So remember, folks, we are on Facebook. Like us there. Feel free to give us some tweetings at the Tweeter. You can follow us on Stitcher Radio. That's where you can get us as well.
Stitchy Stitch.
Stitchy, Stitchy, Stitchy up. And then there's the easiest way to get us, I think.
Best way. You can get Lisa and Nicole delivered in your mailbox. Just go to offstageonair.com.
Right. And you can just click and we'll send it right to you. Pretty soon we're going to be on TuneIn because I need to get Echo. Alexa needs to bring me up in my house.
We need her to know who we are.
We do. We know we do. Also, folks, just stand by for the podcast, which you should be listening to. If you're listening to us on the radio, go to iTunes. Get us at iTunes. And while you're there, please leave us a review.
Happy, awesome review.
Yeah, please.
Tell us we're rock stars. We'll take it.
We're begging. We need it.
It's okay.
Yep. If you are not listening to us on the podcast, you're listening to us on the radio. Austin Theater, Austin Monitor News is next.
Yes.
But stick around for those of us backstage and we'll hang out there. Nicole and I will be back next week when we look at what's happening offstage and on the air. And
I love this.
Yeah. So I'm just going to play it. It's from A Tree Grows in Brooklyn.
Okay.
Don't be afraid of anything. Fear is to die.
Okay, the curtain has come down on Panic! The Musical, the story of a hapless young group of people that are panicked because they've got too much stuff to do and not enough time to do it in. But here they go. Anyway, so we are here for backstage, and we have one very brave person that decided to join us backstage here. Most people are afraid to be back here amongst the dumpsters and the rats and snakes back behind the radio station, and that is Jason Graft.
Behind the dumpsters where I'm most comfortable.
I know. You seem very comfortable here. But we're going to start by getting the answer to the trivia question. So do the very short version to remind people what it is.
So this is from the gay divorce stage version. Then they did the movie version, the gay divorcee. When they were going back, Porter often accommodated, let's see, when Astaire wanted one song from the gay divorce cut because he found it difficult to sing, Porter flatly refused. What was the song? It is one of the few that made it into the movie,
right?
The Gay Divorcee.
Okay.
A, After You Who. B, I've Got You On My Mind. C, Night and Day. D, You're in Love. Or E, The Physician.
What do you say?
B, that was my guess.
I've Got You On My Mind?
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to say A, but I want it to be I Got You Under My Skin.
That's not on here.
Oh, what was the third one?
Night and Day.
Night and Day.
Night and Day
is
what I want it to be.
Yeah. That's my second
And you
choice.
Have After You
I have
Who?
A. Yeah, You Who After You Who.
I don't know what the answer is, to be honest
with
you.
Oh, well, there you go.
Here it is. No, here it is. C, Astaire wanted Night and Day cut.
There
Thankfully,
you go.
Porter overruled him, and Astaire sings the difficult song beautifully. I'm sure all good Porter fans out there noticed that The Physician was not even in the gay divorce, but The New Yorkers and later The Nymph Erin.
Wow.
That's got to take guts to go, no, I'm sorry, Fred Astaire, you're going to sing the song I want you to sing.
Well,
if you're Cole Porter,
yeah.
I think
yeah.
you could probably do that.
And Manuel Miranda may get away with that one, too.
Yeah. So, Jason,
yes.
You've not been on offstage and on the air before.
No, I've not.
Why not?
Because I just got back into acting after a 12-year absence.
Ah.
And so my first show back was the production of Streetcar Named Desire for that Austin Shakespeare did. And then this is my second show,
uh-huh.
Midsummer Night's Dream.
So you worked with Ann Ciccolella.
Yes, I did.
She's our co-host here on the show.
She is.
Yes.
Chicky, chicky, yeah. Boom, boom. She's in New York right now, seeing a whole bunch of good shit.
Oh,
yes,
lovely.
She is.
Where do you hail from?
Northeast Indiana.
Northeast
Indiana. Yes.
Gary, Indiana. That's, Gary, Indiana.
No.
Indiana no. wants me. Lord, I can't go back there.
No, home of Shelley Long, Fort Wayne, Indiana.
I have flown into Fort Wayne many times.
You're one of the lucky ones because you must have left right after that.
Well, no, I had I flew my own plane and I kept it at Gary, Indiana. So we were Fort Wayne was a mere hop, skip, and a jump from where I kept the airplane. So you grew up in Indiana.
Yes.
Why are you here and not Chicago?
How'd you get here?
Because I fell in love with a good Texas woman.
Oh,
there you go. That's what happens.
It's what happens. Yeah.
And when did that happen?
12 years ago.
12 years ago.
And where did you meet her? Not in Indiana, right?
Yes, no. And well, I met her originally in. Oh my God, my wife, if she ever listens to this.
What's her name?
Her name is Abby.
Hi, Abby.
Shout out to Abby.
We met at New Orleans on her graduation day when she was graduating from Tulane, and then our mutual best friend asked us to be his co-best people for his wedding.
That's cute.
And so awesome. I was best man, she was best woman, and we had a very G-rated. Bachelor party that she flew up from Texas, and so she came up on Thursday, and by Sunday night we had made the decision that I was going to move to Austin.
You were like, we will stay co-people.
So is she from here?
She's originally from College Station.
College Station,
yes.
Heard of that place. So did you do theater in Indiana?
Yes, yes. I was not a theater kid or a show choir kid. Essentially, I was struggling in college, just kind of floating from one class to the other, not with any real goal or destination in mind, but in college because that's where I was supposed to be, and just to take care of an elective. I took a fundamentals of performance class, and it was like someone said, hey, look at this. You had an arm that you haven't been using this for your entire life. And it was just instantaneously, I knew just like that.
Yeah, that's, you know, cool. You hear that a lot in people's stories about stumbling on and going, and
the
it's like
a moment.
It's a aha moment.
Mm-hmm.
Do you also do musical theater?
I wish.
No,
I wish I was a triple threat.
You were young enough to do. You were young enough to do that.
Okay,
you have homework.
I have homework.
Your homework is to take voice lessons and set of voice lessons and dance
sway.
Class.
All right. Okay.
Sway? Sway.
No, I want him to take a dance class.
Okay. All right.
It could be a swaying dance class.
All right. Yes. Well, you're making my wife incredibly happy right now.
That's your homework.
Dance classes help for acting. You just learn your body in a totally different
way. It's very
manner.
True. I guess, of course, I've taken tap.
Didn't think you were going to get the third degree while you were sitting here.
I did not.
Never go back behind
the firing squad comes in behind us in a moment. Don't worry.
The funny thing is that I've done plenty of musicals. It's just kind of the nature of being in a small college department.
Uh-huh.
Regardless of whether you can do the role or not, you're up there doing it. And but like, so I can do stage kind of, if you put a sword in my hand or ask me to do a very elaborate, you know, hand-to-hand stage combat piece or very elaborate sword and rapier piece, I pick it up as quickly as you'd want me to. It's just, it's like second
nature.
What
if I don't want
me.
You to whip, pick it up quickly?
Well, I can act like I'm an idiot. That comes very easily.
I like that more.
And then, but if you do the same footwork, but just put it to waltz music, I am. I can't do
okay,
it.
So, what
at
does
all.
That tell you?
That I have.
It's severe. A mental thing.
It is a mental thing because if you could pick up that choreography, it's the same type of.
It is. That's, yes. Yeah. I guess it is a mental thing.
You got to let go. So tell us, Jason, when did this all start for you?
It's funny that you mentioned that because when I was in college, I was always known as a director, never an actor, and because I could never let go, ever.
Okay,
and then once I came to Austin and kind of re-experienced acting as an adult that's had a little bit of therapy and is much better in mental headspace, I have had this opportunity to kind of experience acting in a completely brand new light without constantly hating and doubting myself the entire time.
Excellent.
And so it's something that I've rediscovered my love for and am exploring this brand new world of it that's opened up to me, which with Oberon, you know, at Midsummer, that's it's like, how big do you want to go? Yeah. Because this part can handle that.
So what caused you to come out of retirement and audition for Austin Shakespeare?
Well, it was a combination of quite a few things. The biggest one was that I had a few years earlier finally admitted that I had a problem with drinking and checked myself into rehab. Mm-hmm. And then when I came out of that, I spent about a year just kind of relearning how to live your life. And after that was done and after some therapy, it just my son saw, this is actually a cute story, my son saw Hairspray at Zilker.
Right.
And he went nuts for it. He saw it must have four or five times in the course of that summer. I only went once, the last closing night. And so they would come and say hi to the crowd after each mm-hmm. show. And so my son went streaking down the hill, went right up on stage, and he'd been there so many times that the cast had already known him. And so they're saying, "Hey, Charlie, how you doing?" and stuff. And I went down there and to go get him, and he had ran all the way to the back of the stage. And so I got up on stage, and it would be the first time that I'd ever been on stage in 12 years. And I turned around and saw the audience, and it had been, I'm going to get emotional.
Son okay. of a,
and it had been the first time I'd seen an audience from that perspective, and I started tearing up. And it was like this huge – I realized that I had forgotten I had that extra arm again. And that night I went home and got on the computer and found out that in like 3 or 4 days, Austin Shakespeare was going to be auditioning for Macbeth, which I played. That was the last play that I did was Macbeth. And I was awful. You should invite me back just so I could explain how awful I was in Macbeth. And they were auditioning for Macbeth and Streetcar Named Desire. And Streetcar Named Desire is one of those shows. I have always responded really strongly to Tennessee Williams' writing. We deal with a lot of the same issues.
Wait, stop. Yeah. Your microphone just stopped working. Pick that one up over there.
Oh. Is that better?
No. Huh. What just happened?
I don't know.
But there it is. Go. You're good.
There?
Yeah. Okay. Nicole fixed it.
The fact that I was auditioning for a professional theater with actors that were flown in from New York to play the role on an Equity stage in a very small cast. The Streetcar is not a huge show, and then to get the opportunity.
Great people. You worked with great people.
Unbelievable. Yeah. And they were so welcoming, and none of them knew it because I was terrified to tell them any of this stuff that I haven't acted in 12 years, and they're going, great, look, we're stuck with this guy. And they were all welcome, so wonderful, such a wonderful experience, and it was the best reintroduction back into theater because it felt like I was doing a show back in college with all of my best friends again. And so to come back, it was just a remarkable, remarkable experience. And then I did not get cast in Macbeth. Thank you, Anne, which allowed me to tackle Oberon, which has just been a dream come true.
What a wonderful story. I love the story about the time on Hairspray, and it must have meant so much more to you that your family was there at the same time as well.
Yes.
As your son being a part of that.
Right.
Moment.
Now, that's Charlie kind of cool. is his name?
Charles.
Is he a performer?
It's funny that you brought up Ham for Ham earlier because I'd like to let everyone know that he's putting on Hamilton in our backyard. He will be playing multiple roles.
Oh, my God. I will so buy a ticket
I will
to that.
Be playing Hercules Mulligan.
My
wife.
If you can't make it to New York, just
as good right here.
Yes. Charles has his own performance going.
Exactly. And we were talking earlier about the elaborate pre-show that Midsummer Night's Dream. They have a fortune teller in there. And I'll share this because I know you guys got to go. But so my son went in there and sat down at the fortune teller. And she read his hand. She's like, "So what do you want to be when you grow up?" And he goes, "I want to be my dad."
Oh, my God. I'm going to choke up.
I know.
Well, that's great. And what is his favorite Hamilton song?
Guns and Chips.
Oh, you hear it?
I hear it.
Yeah, it's playing right now.
Is it playing right
yeah,
now?
Yeah, that's amazing. Guns
yes.
and Chips.
And he knows almost the Lafayette rap.
Well, if Charles were here, he'd be singing it with it. Jason, thanks so much for joining
us
backstage.
Thank you.
Be careful passing the dumpsters. The rats do jump out.
Right.
Okay, see you, everybody.
Alexander Hamilton, troops are waiting in the field for you.